Welcome to For the Health of It, starring Dr. Jennifer Kretzinger, wellness chiropractor. She is joined by her co-host Jessica and producer Mike Clark. They will inspire you to eat, move, sleep, think, and live better.
Back in the studio, and we are in the news again. And I tell you, we are going to talk about things like, oh, the birth control pill actually can make your memory all wonky. How women, wonky.
What does wonky mean?
It's my new favorite word. I'm not really sure.
I like it.
Yeah, isn't it a good word?
I'm going to use that.
I'm going to show you an article that actually proves that women are tougher than men.
Oh, no doubt about it.
Yep. And we may even be able to argue whether or not coffee helps with depression.
It helps me with everything. So.
Well, especially, Mike, when you substitute meals with coffee.
That's what I did this morning.
Well, and speaking of, Alternet in September of 2011 actually talked about how we have changed what we view as a mealtime with our cultural construct. The article is called, There is No Biological Reason to Eat Three Meals a Day, So Why Do We Do It? This was posted from Dr. Mercola. Isn't that interesting? So we always say, three meals a day. And
I very rarely eat three meals a day. I probably eat two.
Well, and a number of recent studies have been exploring this, just that whole idea of this three meals a day. And the findings have been wonky.
There it is. There's the wonky thing.
For example, eating just one large meal a day was found to lower your weight and body fat, but it raised blood pressure, insulin resistance, and glucose intolerance. And then eating at least four small meals a day, on the other hand, was found by one study to reduce your obesity risk by 45%.
Yeah, isn't that they say to do?
Like I eat a lot of small days. I graze throughout the day.
Yep.
But then a different study found that it had no effect at all. Some research seems to indicate that alternate day fasting, so basically fasting every other day, might decrease your risk of heart disease and cancer. This is what Alternet had to say about this. For most of history, meals were very variable. A medieval northern European peasant would start his morning with ale or bread or both, then bring some sort of food out into the fields and have a large meal sometime in the afternoon.
He started his day with a beer?
I know, that's what I was thinking, beer and bread.
I like that.
Okay. Now, and this peasant might have what he called dinner at 2 in the afternoon or 6 in the evening or later, depending on his work, the season, and other factors, and it tended to be eaten in daylight. Not because eating earlier was considered healthier, but because cooking, consuming, and cleaning up is difficult in the dark or by firelight. What I take away from this is maybe, and I've never thought about this, but maybe we're meant to not get into a pattern. You know, it's kind of like exercise. You got to keep shaking it up.
What I take away from this is that maybe he passed out from the beer and then woke up at 2 and had breakfast.
And then actually started to work in the fields and got going. And then the sun set and he couldn't build a fire. And
should we really be eating like medieval people, though? I mean, life expectancy back then was, what, 40 or something?
Yeah, didn't they eat white bread?
Well, at least they were thin and not dying of heart disease like our people.
You're right.
So, food for
thought. That's interesting, yeah.
They didn't have video games, TV back then.
Well, that's true. And they didn't have cars. So they had to walk everywhere. Okay, so obesity. Journal, August of 2011. This again was reported by Mercola. The title is a leaky gut causing you to pack on the pounds? Now, Jessica, do you want to define leaky gut for us? Because I know you've researched this yourself.
So basically, toxins are leaking from your digestive tract into your bloodstream and causing a lot of toxicity and inflammation.
I don't want anything leaking. Okay.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah.
And you know, causes of this could be chronic inflammation, chronic exposure to foods that you're sensitive or allergic to, drug use that's created problems. And this is what the article says, is that visceral fat, that basically means fat under the skin, like belly fat, has a strong correlation with metabolic dysfunctions such as insulin resistance, hepatic steatosis, and inflammation. One theory is that impaired gut barrier function leading to increased leakage of gut-derived antigens may help to drive visceral fat deposits. Okay, that was a lot of big words, but basically it says if your gut's messed up, you get fat.
I think if you eat the squishy white bread, you get fat.
That was a blog of ours. That was very fun. So the research found a positive correlation between how big your waist was and how permeable your intestines were. So basically, if your intestines get trashed and you can't absorb your nutrients, you tend to put weight on around the waist.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So again, we talked about in our last in the news, the benefit of healing the gut. We talked about the link between depression. Remember that? You got to heal the gut, and you can do that through courses, a course of probiotics. You can do that through omega-3 fatty acids.
You know what happened when I started taking probiotics for the first time, like every single day for months? My skin cleared up. And when I was in my 20s, I started getting zits. I probably took antibiotics at the time too. And then I took the probiotics every day, and my skin has been so clear ever since. It does amazing things.
Yeah, most people really can benefit from a round of probiotics, you know, which you can buy at, you know, our office. We have them in a health food store, and it's just putting the healthy bacteria back in the gut. And this healthy bacteria basically will help you properly digest your food and keep your gut healthy and free of inflammation.
And not just a yogurt, because that's really not enough. That's like one, two strains. You need a whole full spectrum strain of probiotics.
Yeah, I agree with you. Well, and here we have The Telegraph, which is a UK journal, and it talks about how women on the pill remember things differently. So it's not saying that their memory is worse, they just remember differently. It says women who take oral contraception remember events differently, according to a first study on the effects of pill on memory. Basically, it was a U.S. study that emphasized that the medication does not damage memory. It just means that a change in hormone balance mean women on the pill remember things differently. Now, it's important to note that, you know, around 100 million people worldwide take the pill, and it has been linked to a higher risk of blood clots and breast cancer. So this guy, Larry Cahill, he's a neurobiologist who worked on the study. He said the change makes sense because contraceptives suppress sex hormones such as estrogen and progesterone to prevent pregnancy. Those hormones were previously linked to women's strong left brain memory. So basically what those who use the contraceptives, like birth control pills, remember the gist of an emotional event, while women not using the contraceptives better retain details. So if you weren't on the pill and say you watched an accident, a traumatic accident happen, those people were remembering all these details of the event. Women who were on the pill, when they try to recall an event, they can remember the emotional event and how they felt, but they can't recall the details.
So it affects their brain. That's weird.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah. Totally. I know it gives me peace of mind.
Well, it's just important to know and remember that even if the benefits outweigh the risks, for example, the risk of getting pregnant is more of a value to a woman than, say, increased chance of breast cancer.
Right.
The pill still potentially is causing real changes in your brain and your body that we're just starting to understand. Mm-hmm. And speaking of women, the same journal has recently reported that women are found to be the tougher sex.
Oh, that goes without saying.
Yeah, according to the study.
Look what you guys have to do. If we had to give birth, we'd be gone already.
That's exactly right. It talks about how, and maybe that's why, because, you know, from a biological point of view, the difference has probably evolved because women are more likely to ensure the survival of the species. You know, we need to be able to resist infection when pregnant and when nurturing a child. So according to this study, the fairer sex women is genetically programmed to better resist infections and cancer and also have a backup system for fighting disease.
But we also get to cleanse every month. I actually read a comic strip that said why women live longer than men, and it had to do with the fact that we have the ability to cleanse our bodies every month. I don't know how true that is.
Do you know what she's talking about, Mike?
Yes, I'm trying to not think about it, though.
Okay, moving on. I'm sticking with The Telegraph. I like this UK journal. This title is Common Painkillers Can Raise Heart Risk. So taking daily doses of over-the-counter painkillers can increase the risk of heart attacks and stroke by up to 40%. Well, you may remember Vioxx. That was pulled off the market. It was an arthritis drug. It was a painkiller for arthritis. It was withdrawn in 2004 because there were evidence that it led to heart attacks. And it was a 45% higher risk factor. And patients who regularly use something called diclofenac, which is a new common anti-inflammatory drug, they're shown to have two-fifths higher chance of suffering heart problems as well. So we talked about ibuprofen in the last in the news. Remember that, Mike?
Yes.
That's one of the most common painkillers. It's linked to an 18% higher risk of heart attack and stroke.
Hmm.
So this is talking about NSAIDs, non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs. And they're the range of drugs that lower the temperature, relieve pain, and reduce swelling. And they're commonly used, you know, to treat arthritis, back pain, gout, headaches, and flu. So that also includes Celebrex, the arthritis drug. And then the more common painkillers like ibuprofen and naproxen.
Right. Got that commercial stuck in my head. Celebrex, Celebrex.
It's really sad that that's what sticks in your head.
I know. I don't even watch that much TV either.
So Dorianne Maddox, she's a senior cardiac nurse at the British Heart Foundation, said, as with any medicine, there are benefits and potential risks to taking painkillers. If you're already taking these types of drugs and are worried, don't simply give up on your medication. You should always speak to your doctor first because the benefits may well outweigh the risks for you. Is anyone besides me bothered by the statement, don't simply give up on your medication? You know, like, it's not perfect. Stick it out. Yeah. You know, it might kill you, and it might cause a stroke, but you
hang in there.
Don't give up on it. Yeah. Hang in there. That's I thought that was a pretty ludicrous statement. It's weird. So on that note, I think we all need a little bit of a break. And when we come back, remember we talked about coffee and depression, Mike?
Yes.
Okay, we're going to talk about that in just a minute. See you on the other side.
You're listening to some raw talk about full potential living for the health of it. Your host is Dr. Jennifer Kretzinger, wellness chiropractor at Spinal Corrective Center in Amherst, New Hampshire. For more information about Dr. Jennifer or this podcast, check out spinalcorrectivecenter.com. If you would like to schedule a health checkup with Dr. Jennifer, call 603-673-5600 and mention this podcast to receive a special offer. That's 603-673-5600. To find a wellness chiropractor in your area, go to chiropractic.org/doctorfinder. Now, back to some raw talk about full potential living for the health of it.
We are back. And again, we're with the UK journal, The Telegraph. This is by Stephen Adams, a medical correspondent. And he is talking about whether or not coffee lowers depression risk. And the study found that those who drink 2 or 3 cups a day have a 15% lower incidence of depression than those who rarely do so.
Why do you think I'm happy all the time, Jenny?
Well, I don't know. I'm just putting this out there. Okay. I'm not sure what to think. This was academics at Harvard School of Public Health in the U.S., and it says, although they emphasize the study did not prove that caffeine protected against depression, they noted that there appeared to be a dose-dependent response. That is, those who drank the most coffee tended to suffer the least from depression.
I've heard so many mixed opinions about coffee. It's good for you. It's bad for you. It's good for you. It's bad. You know, it's crazy. Moderation,
maybe. And maybe the coffee is giving them a sense of happiness, but they stop the coffee and they'll fall into a deep dark. But, you know, who knows?
I would go into a dark place.
Without your coffee?
Yeah, you'd come in here, the lights would be off, it'd be unshaven. Although it really isn't much different.
Is that
different
any
from
different?
Anyway.
Well, here's my observational note. You know, I've led several hundred, maybe 500 people through cleanses over the last decade or so. And I can say that literally across the board, people, even if they're freaked out about getting off coffee, once people get off coffee, and we can talk 4 to 6 cups a day, they get to themselves to the place where they're off coffee. The biggest difference is that people feel more even with their emotions.
Right.
Their energy is raised and they feel even. They don't have the ups and downs and ups and downs.
You're not peaking and crashing.
Well, and I would think
it's a drug, you know, so it is, you know, so.
Well, maybe when you get back in touch with your evenness, maybe for some people that's depression.
Yeah. Do you really want me even, Jenny? I don't know.
I don't know if it would serve the podcast, but
I probably wouldn't.
I personally can tell you that I feel much more balanced and serene and calm off of coffee. What do you think, Jessica?
I quit coffee for 8 months and I really didn't like it. So I went back on it.
So maybe the caveat here is that if you're going to drink coffee, at least drink organic coffee and don't put like aspartame in it and don't put tons of sugar.
I have mine black.
And dairy, right?
Yeah, I drink it black. I drink 1 cup of organic coffee in the morning and it's just
It won't
nice.
Kill you, girl.
Again, I'm not condoning coffee. I'm just bringing you some interesting ideas.
And thank you for that, Jenny.
Let's move on to wheat. So there's this guy, Dr. William Davis. He's a preventive cardiologist. He practices in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. He has a new book out called Wheat Belly. And he basically talks about why wheat is evil. He says it's addictive and how shunning it will make you skinny. He says it's bad for your health, so bad that it should carry a Surgeon General's warning.
I thought it was a staple of living, you know, bread.
I used to think wheat bread was healthy, yeah. And then I went to whole grains, and then I realized just being gluten-free just felt even better.
Well, and he says the crux of the problem with wheat is that the stuff we eat today has been genetically altered. He said even a conventional wheat plant from 50 years ago completely looks different. It's
really?
2.5 feet shorter. It's stockier because wheat now is genetically modified. Yeah. He says
what
that new strains have been generated using what the wheat industry proudly insists are traditional breeding techniques, but they basically are gamma irradiation and toxins such as sodium azide. He says the poison control people will tell you that if someone accidentally ingests sodium azide, you shouldn't try to resuscitate the person because you could die too, giving them CPR. It's a very highly toxic chemical.
Wow.
So the interviewer asked this doctor, can't you just get around any potential health concerns by buying products made with organically grown wheat? And he said no, because the actual wheat plant itself is the same. He actually said organic is basically like putting lipstick on something and calling it organic. It's good. What the truth is, it may be slightly better, but it's still not good. And he actually cites research that indicates whole grains are healthy is all conducted the same way. White flour is replaced with whole wheat flour, which no question is better for you. But he says the analogy would be to say that filtered cigarettes are less bad for you than unfiltered cigarettes, and therefore a whole bunch of filtered cigarettes is good for you. That's his point.
I've even heard of associations between the new wheat that's out there and the celiac.
I think that's true. And he talks in a book a lot about how wheat makes us fat. So if you're interested in his whole explanation, which I found this fascinating, this is his answer about how wheat makes us fat. He says it contains amylopectin A, which is more efficiently converted to blood sugar than just any other carbohydrate, including table sugar. In fact, he says 2 slices of whole wheat bread increase blood sugar to a higher level than a candy bar does.
Really?
Yeah. And then after about 2 hours, your blood sugar plunges and you get shaky. Your brain feels foggy and you're hungry. So let's say you have an English muffin for breakfast. 2 hours later, you're starving. So you have a handful of crackers and then some potato chips and your blood sugar rises again. And that cycle of highs and lows just keeps going throughout the day. So you're constantly feeling hungry and constantly eating. And dietitians have responded to this by advising that we graze throughout the day, which is just nonsense, he says. If you eliminate wheat from your diet, you're no longer hungry between meals because you've stopped that cycle. You've cut out the appetite stimulant and consequently you lose weight very quickly. And he says that he's seen it with thousands of patients. And I have to say, I have seen that quite a bit with the cleanse and with myself. When I just take wheat out, pretty much grains out of my diet for the most part, I lose weight quite quickly.
I find that if I eat wheat, I crave more of it and more of it and more of it. And if I eliminate it, I have no desire.
Well, and he argues that's one reason why there's wheat in so many products, because it's an appetite stimulant and you're encouraged to eat more. And lastly, we are going to cite a page called thewelladjustedbabies.com. It's a fellow chiropractor who gives 10 reasons parents would take healthy children to chiropractors.
Let's hear them.
Yeah. So the first reason is to maximize their child's neuroplasticity, brain and nerve development. That's a pretty cool reason why. Wow, I want to give my child every chance to have their brain and nerves develop as best they can. The next one is to enhance their child's overall health and well-being. And we see that all the time. Children who are completely happy, healthy, no pain, no sickness, their parents just want them to be as healthy as they can.
And there's parents that come in that have noticed, maybe they have 2 children, one that did not get adjusted since birth, and then one that did. They'd notice huge differences in the kids. Yeah.
We actually just had one of our practice members post on our Facebook Moms group page about how her son, who's 5 months old, I believe now, who I actually adjusted at birth, how he's already crawling. And it surprised her because her older two didn't crawl nearly as soon. And we were talking about how just the fact that his spine is aligned, his pelvis is aligned, it's allowing him to develop at the fastest rate his body wants to do it.
Wow.
Cool.
Next reason, to strengthen immunity and reduce the incidence of colds, earaches, and general illness. Very common. We see that all the time, especially if children show the first sign of a cold. Parents know, just bring them in, get them adjusted, give them an immune boost. The next one, to help with colic and irritable baby syndrome. We've actually had medical doctors refer infants to us with severe colic, and it's amazing how quickly children can respond. You know, they're just labeled as colic with really no explanation. You know, they're spitting up and the parents aren't given any choices other than medication. Who wants to give a newborn, you know, medication? So the parents bring them in, and, you know, sometimes we'll find little misalignments that once we help their body release them, their body really relaxes, their nervous system starts to calm
down. And all of a sudden the parents are getting some sleep.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Exactly. The next reason is to help with asthma, breathing difficulties, and allergies. We have quite a few empty allergy medication bottles in our drug tank.
Yes, we do.
And asthma medication to improve spinal posture. And actually, this is more and more common. We just did a kids' workshop this past week, and we had the kids bring in their backpacks, and they brought their handheld games. So we had kids with their iPods and DSs, and we actually taught them the proper posture with their handheld toys, and also how to wear their backpack properly and make sure it was the correct weight.
Those things weigh a ton.
They do.
And see the kids at the school lugging those things around.
Well, and the more parents are understanding that posture is just the window to your spine and nerve system, and they start to already recognize, say, in their 8, 9, 10-year-old, that these children have poor posture. They're putting that together and making sure they get chiropractic care. Next one is to improve their child's ability to concentrate. Do you remember, Jessica, I remember one of our practice members in his progress check had talked to you about how he could concentrate now and was getting better grades.
Yes, yes. And there was another one who wasn't doing very well in school, started getting adjusted, and for the first time ever, she's a teenager, made the honor roll.
Oh, I remember that.
And then started joining some of the sports teams. And she was not athletic at all.
And these are kids who were being already labeled as possible hyperactivity,
right,
and attention deficit. And
exactly,
they just had irritation in their nerve systems. Their brains weren't as fully connected to their body. So yeah, parents are recognizing the value of chiropractic in those cases. The next one is to assist with behavioral disorders and enhance emotional well-being. I can't tell you how many times a parent will say to me, can you just give them an attitude adjustment?
It works.
The next one is to help alleviate digestive problems. And I'll tell you, over the years, I can't tell you how many times, you know, the parent will whisper to me, just want to let you know they're constipated. And I have the child on the table and I'll get like this humongous release in, say, their tailbone or their low back, and their body just had some severe compression. And I'll say to the parent, don't leave until they go to the bathroom because it's going to happen soon.
Thank God you guys are whispering and not yelling it across the room. That's all I got to say.
You know, I hear you talking to moms of newborns too about how the car seats are causing subluxation.
Yes.
And contributing to digestive issues.
You're right, because the subluxation happens right at the middle to the middle lower back in the car seat, just the way that they sit. So oftentimes these kids will spit up more or they'll get constipated. And as soon as we start adjusting that area, we call it the car seat subluxation. It's amazing how quickly their digestion improves. And lastly, to assist with bedwetting and sleep issues. And that's interesting because it's very common with kids who wet the bed that they have some type of, we call it subluxation or malposition in their tailbone. And it's not uncommon, you know, kids learning to walk, they'll fall down onto their hip or their tailbone, and it'll get knocked out of place, and the nerves will become irritated, and that's the nerves to the bladder. So we've seen so much success with children who get adjusted in their, we call enuresis, is the technical name for bedwetting stops. And chiropractic is certainly not a treatment for bedwetting, but we find if there's nervous system interference that's not allowing the body to function normally, and you remove that interference, the body can heal itself, and oftentimes bedwetting can go away. And then lastly, sleep problems. Adults and children alike oftentimes will feel sleepy after an adjustment. They'll just be ready to let their body relax and heal. And very, very common, if a newborn comes in for their first adjustment, or even a toddler, I will warn the parents, expect them to take an extra long nap or sleep more through the night tonight. Don't be concerned. And it's very consistent that a child will sleep really well after an adjustment.
That was one of the first things I noticed when I first started getting adjusted, was I was able to sleep so much better.
Well, and you heal when you sleep.
That's right.
So that's it. So let's leave you with this. If you haven't had your spine checked, I really encourage you to find a chiropractor in your area and to do that. If you do get your spine checked, but not regularly, consider getting on a regular plan, even as much as once a week, certainly every other week. That's the best way to be healthy. Saves you time, saves you money, saves you heartache, because your body is working well. We live our life through our nerve system. We got to keep it flowing.
And if you want to learn more about chiropractic in general, follow us on Facebook, Spinal Corrective Center.
It's fantastic. Okay, thanks. Be well, everybody.
You've been listening to some raw talk about full potential living for the health of it. For more information, go to spinalcorrectivecenter.com or call Dr. Jennifer at 603-673-5600. That's spinalcorrectivecenter.com or call 603-673-5600.